Paul Rudnick's in New York City. I think he leaves at times, but I think I've only talked to him in New York City. I don't know, maybe he goes up the Catskills and something once in a while. And I'm so glad he's talking. We didn't have this planned exactly, but since I only have a few more shows, I didn't want to go through the rest of my life without another Paul Rudnick episode from his life. And we have him right now on the line with us. And Paul, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. You do leave New York on occasion, right? I mean, you go to where do you go? Catskills, or where do you go?
Really, I sometimes venture as far out as Long Island. Last week, I was actually in Denver.
In Denver? What were you doing in Denver, Paul?
I was doing some book promotion, and I was desperately looking. I thought there were going to be marijuana stores on every street corner now. And it just wasn't the case. All I kept finding were sort of cupcake shops and Duane Reade.
Oh, they're great with cupcakes, though.
They are. It's a cupcake capital.
Yeah, yeah. Did you finally find one, or would you rather not say?
No. Sadly, I have nothing to report.
You know, I have so many medical conditions that would benefit. That's what bothers me. And I'm in Walker's, Wisconsin. You know, Governor Walker's Wisconsin. So it's not going to happen for me. Not Paul Walker. That's another problem. What?
Please. I don't think marijuana will help with that.
No.
That's a job for heroin.
Yeah. Poppies. Those poppies from Oz. What was with those poppies from Oz, you know?
Good Lord. Well, they sure had the right idea. I mean, oh, my Lord.
Do you remember that scene when you think, are they wandering through these poppy fields and doing weird things in this?
And eventually ending up unconscious.
Yes.
Which is what gets them to the Emerald City. No, that's one of those movies where it's wonderful because I'm sure most families think of it as wholesome Christian fare.
Yes.
And they don't think about it until years later when their children are in rehab.
So do we catch you in a religious or a ceremonial mode now? Because Passover is coming up. But are you a celebrant?
Well, I think the most exciting moment this year was, I don't know if people saw that photo when Ted Cruz was sort of looking for half a vote in New York. He actually went to a temple and wore a yarmulke.
Okay.
And it kind of looked like when the Grinch stole Passover.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So that's how I am in a pre-Passover state of mind.
Yeah, Ted Cruz. He didn't go to any temples or anything, probably. Didn't do any service.
I loved watching that moment whenever Ted Cruz has to try and impersonate a human being. It's always priceless because he did that sort of CNN town hall, whatever that was, with his wife and children,
yeah,
who are so clearly living in terror. And he keeps trying, he's sort of that cone head thing of trying to simulate warmth and trying to imitate, well, what would a person do if a person were in this situation?
If a person had.
And poor Heidi, his wife, who just, you know, there are guns in the wings pointed at her head. She told that story about the 100 cans of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Did you hear that?
No.
This is right after they got back from their honeymoon.
Really?
Heidi woke up and realized it wasn't a dream. And she discovered that overnight, Ted had gone out and bought 100 cans of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Because he somehow imagined that she wasn't going to cook. And I thought, I couldn't imagine the only thing scarier than waking up next to Ted Cruz would be Ted Cruz and 100 cans of Campbell's soup. And they were trying to be very jolly about it, as if this was, you know, a charming honeymoon memory. And you thought, no, that's like waking up in a bunker somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. And that's all you have are 100 cans of soup.
She's also,
well, that's very scary. That really put off
my home. Like him in a strange way.
She's looking like him, did you say?
Yes, it's sort of like whatever their, you know, Vulcan mind meld is. It's really, she's being sucked with deep within.
Yeah. Well, when they was here in Wisconsin, you know, his daughter was with him, and they tried to put a cheese head on him. See, that was quite a stir. Because no one knocks off a cheese head from a child's hand except Ted Cruz.
Please. Well, and Ted, I would never actually feel sympathy for him, but even his friends hate him.
Oh.
You know, every college roommate he ever has had has now gone on record as saying, oh, no, he was disgusting back then as well.
Yeah.
So poor Ted just can't win on every possible level.
Well, we'll see how this plays out then. We could learn to love him. You never know, really.
I know it would be that. Well, they actually have been scientific studies about how people on every side of the political spectrum actually recoil from him. You know, that there's some pheromone or whatever that is that he secretes that you just think, God. Well, like when you were talking about that octopus that escaped,
yeah.
And I thought maybe Ted Cruz had tried to pet him or something.
Anything else you about Ted Cruz? Or we pretty much covered this in all.
I think we've rung that dry.
Yeah, I'm gonna try. Going back to Passover, and your Passover ceremony is when you were a kid. Did you have to ask the four questions? Were you the youngest?
I was. I was.
Me too.
But my family was kind of great because we were so reformed. We practically did the service in Latin. It was it was insane because we would kind of skim through things, like we'd have the two questions.
Oh,
you know, just to get to dessert.
Got them in half. That's great.
But it was it was always kind of. I always liked that only the Jews would have a family a holiday rather where you got to recline. That's one of the rules of the Seder.
Yeah.
That you all get to kind of slouch in your chairs and be comfortable.
Because my father just slid down in his chair because my mother had covered it in plastic, you know. So he reclined by nature.
Well, plastic slipcovers are a great Jewish sacrament.
It is.
That's every day of the year.
It's mentioned. It's like the 11th commandment, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that piece here? Do you want to?
Or sure, if you'd like to hear some of it. I have a piece that's going to be in the New Yorker next week.
Is it embargoed? Are we at?
Nope.
Are we liable?
We are free and clear.
Oh, good. No, I'd love to.
Okay. It was inspired by an actual article in the New York Times. So I'm going to read a little chunk of that first to give you, put you in the mood.
Okay.
This is actually from the Times. Quote, when it came to personal interactions with Jews or issues that had an impact on Jews, President Lincoln did the right thing on every occasion. Harold Holzer, a prominent Lincoln scholar, said in an interview. Quote, I myself have a regard for the Jews, Lincoln reportedly said. My chiropodist is a Jew, and he has so many times, quote, put me on my feet, unquote, that I have no objection to giving his countrymen, quote, a leg up. So Lincoln was clearly also the world's first Jewish stand-up.
Yeah.
But I've taken this as my spark for a piece that continues as follows. Okay. This is so embarrassing. But here in my diary, I feel I must recount the day in 1864 when my parents, Max and Rose Fleischman, invited President Lincoln to our home in Virginia for our Passover Seder. My father was the president's chiropractor, and he'd promise good company, a taste of horseradish, and a pillow for your back. When the president arrived, my entire extended family was already seated around our dining room table. Good evening, everyone, said the president. He's such a handsome man, murmured my Aunt Tessie. I'm loving the beard. Is he Orthodox? But what's with the hat, asked my brother Milt. Does he do a magic act? You're too skinny, declared my mother. Sit, eat, and remember, we're all voters. Well, except for the women and Uncle Walt. I'll vote when I'm ready, said Uncle Walt, who immediately took his newspaper and left for the outhouse for the remainder of the meal. Come, meet the Fleischmann, said my father, introducing everyone and saving me for last. This is my beautiful, gifted, and trancing, but still modest, and entirely available 18-year-old daughter, Miriam. I thought she was 27, said Aunt Tessie. Thank God for gaslight, said Nana Estelle. Miriam may look a few weeks older, my father informed the president, from all the reading and sewing and concern for our nation. But she was so impressed with your fine words at Gettysburg. Is Gettysburg a Jewish fellow, wondered Aunt Tessie? We should have him over at Purim. You're a wonderful family, said the president. Thank you so much for inviting me into your home. Pish, pish, said my mother. It's our pleasure. Now, you're the president, but you're also a lawyer, am I right? Yes, I am, said the president, although I am largely self-educated. It's not Harvard, said Milt, who'd barely finished high school. A lawyer is a lawyer, said Aunt Tessie. Unless he's the kind of lawyer who advertises in the back pages of the Gazette, said Uncle Ezra. where those ads say, "Were you hit by a runaway horse and buggy?" Come see Crazy Abe. He's crazy about justice. "Actually, people call me Honest Abe," said the president. "I thought you were a lawyer," said Aunt Essie. That's a taste of it. So you can read the rest of it in The New Yorker next week.
Oh, that was great.
Thank you.
I love it.
Oh, Mazel Tov.
And you know what? It's so nice to hear Pish Pish again after all these years.
Oh, isn't it? Kinahara, yeah. Poo Poo Poo.
Yeah. You know, it's disappeared from modern discourse.
I know. It's like, you know, all those grand, like, tukas and, you know, plots.
But, I mean, Tut Tut has nothing on Pish Pish.
Tut Tut is Goyisha.
Yeah.
You can see exactly how many Jews are in your audience because they're the only ones laughing.
Yeah. They're scattered, but there are some. Yeah, I know.
Well, they were driven out of Wisconsin years ago.
Well, they were driven into Wisconsin, actually.
They were. That's true.
Yeah. It's nice to know that the Jewish family is not changed in all these. It's exactly the same Jewish family you would find today. Back in Lincoln's time. Was a good assortment of characters that were in your actual family growing up?
Yes, they were. I mean, it was a wonderful family. How's
Miriam doing? Is the other question.
Oh, Miriam's doing well. It's just, you know, whenever I write these things, my family will always say, "Oh, you're just making us sound like Jewish cartoons." And I always think, because you are.
Pish pish. You should just say pish pish.
Pish pish, exactly.
We all love our things. That's great. That's wonderful. And we should mention you have a new book out.
I have a new young adult novel called It's All Your Fault, which is just out from Scholastic.
Yeah.
So I was out in Denver, and I'll be in Texas later in the week promoting that.
Yeah. And is this a continuation of the earlier book, this young woman that was the hero of it?
Nope. This is a standalone book. It's about a very innocent, very deeply religious homeschool girl named Caitlin, who's put in charge of her cousin Heller, who is a wild Hollywood starlet. It takes place over the weekend when Heller's big new blockbuster is opening, and Caitlin is assigned to keep her sober and sane.
Yeah. Are you pretty much set on the young adult market now? Is that sort of...
No, it's funny. I kind of wandered into it and have enjoyed it just immensely. But no, I think my next stuff is I'm going to be heading back to the theater and an adult novel and all sorts of other things. I kind of just go wherever the material leads me.
Heading back for the middle-aged and old adult market.
You got it.
Yeah. Have you heard from young adults who read your books and do they get it?
They do. They do, and they're delightful. I think one of my favorite things about the young adult market is how passionate the kids are, that they, when they love a book, they love it all the way, and they almost to the point of stalking. But I think that's so refreshing, and it's just a huge, booming field. So I've been having a blast.
So you're being stalked by young adults now.
I'm trying. No, I'm not on any of those lists. No, I just have been meeting a lot of readers and librarians and things, and they're very appreciative, which is really, it's just so gratifying, I think, for any writer to meet people who've read their work and enjoy it.
Yeah, and Broadway, did you say? Did I hear Broadway?
There may be a theater project in the works. I really can't.
Can't talk about that.
I can't spill the beans out because I don't like to jinx things, but there's something coming up.
Me neither, yeah. We'll break a leg on that.
Oh, thank you.
It'll be great, I'm sure. Paul, thank you so much for coming and joining us today on this religious holiday.
You're so welcome. And I just want to say, you have had the most magnificent run, and I will so miss your show and you. So mazel tov for all those great years.
Well, thank you very much. Paul Rudnick, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
From New York City, where he often is.